Good morning and welcome to a special edition of the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'm Eric George and it's Friday, the 8th of February 2013. A day that came after what potentially will be one that will be remembered for some time as a significant one in Australian sports history, as the ACC released the results of a 12-month investigation into the links between organised crime and what it believes to be extensive doping in a number of sports leagues in Australia. A lot was said, there's a lot to pick through, and it's difficult to try and ascertain too much about how far this is going to extend, but nonetheless, there's a lot to talk about. So over the next half an hour to 45 minutes, I'll be joined by a number of individuals to help me understand what this means for a number of different sports in Australia. First up, I'm joined by Sam McInerney, a fellow graduate journalism student at La Trobe University, and a self-confessed footy nut. How are you, Sam?
Yeah, I'm okay. And we should probably also mention at this point, a crazy Bombers fan as well.
So it's been a tough couple of days.
Yeah, it's kind of come out of nowhere, and it's been a lot to take in. And I think we've got a fair while ahead of us yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that all those points are certainly clear, that it certainly it took everybody by surprise. And that's something I want to get to in a second. But I want to begin with the AFL, because I think that makes the most sense chronologically. Essendon, as you know all too well, was essentially the patient zero of what's going on here. It was the beginning point that there was something big going on, and it all blew up, obviously, with the results of this investigation. In the response to this, both from journalists, from the very busy rumor mill that's been running over the last 12 hours or so, and from the heads of the leagues themselves, there seems to be a perception that the AFL is in the worst position of any of the major sports leagues in Australia, especially winter sports, especially in regards to doping. Do you think that's a fair perception at this point, Sam?
At this point, it seems that they're the ones who are kind of in the media the most, which is probably as a result of, the investigation at Essendon, which has come up in the last couple of days, which is something that the other codes haven't had to deal with. So basically everything that came up today, even though Essendon wasn't mentioned at any point in, the ACC report or anything like that, everyone kind of linked everything back to Essendon, which, in turn was linked to the AFL. I mean, the Essendon press conference was actually conducted in front of AFL logos, which meant that I think from the get-go, this whole story has kind of the AFL all over it, which is, a PR disaster for the AFL and probably something that the other codes are probably, pretty happy that they don't have to deal with at the moment.
So, you are a Bombers fan. Is it acceptable to you? I mean, it's clear at this point that they were injecting their players with something, right?
Yes. Mark McVeigh admitted that they'd had injections off-site, but
The debate is what it was.
Yeah, that's right.
So if they had found a loophole and had found a form of this peptide that WADA doesn't actually ban, would you be okay with that as an Essendon fan, that your team was doing something, legally in the grey zone, that they were really pushing the limits of what they could get away with at this point to try and win?
It's an interesting one, because I think that's basically what all clubs do, All clubs, all scientists try to push the limits. We saw Collingwood go and, do altitude training, which was, kind of brave new world, and now all the other clubs follow it. I know that's nothing that's illegal or dodgy or anything, and while this might be legal, it's obviously a bit more on the nasty side, given everything that goes with it. But I think the thing that'll really make it pretty clear is whether or not these substances were AFL approved. And also approved by WADA or ASADA, which Essendon have said everything is. I think if they have been approved, then they should be in the clear, even if, these substances become illegal later down the track. But if that falls through, I think they're in a lot of trouble.
So I think one of the things we've certainly learnt from this, and it was the same thing that cycling had to learn and a number of different sports had to come to grips with, is that we were extraordinarily naive about this, both the journalists, the league itself to a certain extent, supporters. People just didn't seem to want to accept the fact that this could be something that was happening in the AFL. Do you think that's a fair assessment of what's been going on?
Absolutely. I'm sort of trying to step outside myself a bit here, but, you know, from everything I've said so far, you can tell already, I suppose, that I'm still hopeful that the Bombers are innocent, even though they're on the front page of the paper and we keep hearing all these things about links to criminal organisations and, you know, everything kind of points to things that aren't good. But, you know, in my head, I came up with, you know, this kind of causal chain of events which kind of could explain, you know, how they got to be where they are, which kind of makes sense to me, but probably, you know, it may well have just come across, you know, come about as me trying to stay positive and not wanting to accept, you know, what's really going on.
That was a very similar process to what people did for Lance Armstrong for a long time as well. And obviously not suggesting the same thing's happening here. Obviously Essendon, they've got to complete the same investigation. But just the fact that people are having to try and rationalise away what they've had to just discover is a very unpleasant thing for the AFL to be going through.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, even if Essendon are cleared of wrongdoing, that'll be something that'll be really unpleasant for Essendon supporters for a long time. You know, even if everything gets ticked off and they're found to be not guilty, I know that if, you know, say Essendon were to win a flag this year or next year, that all I'd be hearing about it as an Essendon supporter would be that it's tainted and that they don't deserve it. And that's, I think that's the thing which is really difficult to deal with, you know, in a situation where things are so unclear, and that they might, you know, they might never really be completely cleared up, even if the best case scenario comes to light and the Bombers are found, you know, innocent of everything.
Yeah, and it's the reason why we have to go through all of this is so that we can perhaps get to that outcome. But you're right, it creates a stain on the integrity for the league and so forth. So looking at things from a little bit of a broader perspective here, not just at the Bombers, but at the AFL itself, do you think the AFL has been doing enough to prevent this from happening?
To prevent doping?
Yeah, we'll stick with that because I think organised crime and other things extend far beyond the AFL's reach.
I think the things they're talking about, the substances they're mentioning are incredibly difficult to trace and to register in terms of testing and, you know, and those sorts of things, which I think basically they've got a really good structure in terms of their testing, but that can only take you so far, and you know, these investigations are, I guess, the next step from that, and is something that we're going to see a lot more of as doping becomes more sophisticated and harder to track, I suppose.
So unfortunately, we do have to kind of keep referring to the Bombers because it's the only case in which there's been any real facts that have come to light so far. On the ABC, on the 7:30 report, they were suggesting that they had inquired to the AFL about the legality of peptides. This is a club which had obviously hired the weapon who was controversial himself and a doctor who was, you know, had been linked to, you know, cutting edge and kind of, you know, quite progressive treatments in his career in the NRL. Do you not think that's warning bell territory for the AFL and perhaps they should be taking a closer look at what that club's doing?
Well, I think they've said today that from now on they're going to take a much more active stance in looking at the backgrounds of the people who join footy clubs. You know, everyone from admin or something that is seemingly kind of insignificant up from there. So I think that's something that they've said that they're going to make an effort to do in looking at the backgrounds of these guys, but that's probably, you know, it doesn't help that they've slipped through the cracks. These, you know, people who we're hearing, you know, kind of dodgy things about. I think the pharmacist you mentioned, there was suggestions that he'd used, you know, calf blood and things like this at NRL clubs. And yeah, it's difficult to know why a club would, you know, go after someone with that sort of history. But I think the AFL can't allow clubs to, you know, be in control of who they take anymore. You would think that clubs would do their own due diligence and would be very careful about who they got in. But if this is happening, then, you know, I think the AFL need to tighten up on it. And that's basically what they've said there. They plan to do.
So, finishing this up, you did note something of interest in regards to match fixing and obviously the ongoing investigations into tanking in the AFL. What's your read on that?
Well, I heard a question today asked of the Victorian Police Deputy Commissioner Graham Ashton, and the question was whether he regarded tanking as match fixing. And he looked completely shocked, and I was sort of quite shocked at the question as well. It was something that I'd never really thought about, but that basically seems to fit the absolute definition of match fixing for me. You know, a club trying to throw a game deliberately, not based on any outside involvement from anyone else. That sounds like match fixing, but it's something that the AFL hasn't addressed at any point, and I'm sure that they'll try to keep the investigation at Melbourne completely separate to, you know, to everything we've heard today. But perhaps they shouldn't be completely separate.
You've just raised a whole other can of worms that I'd love to talk about more in terms of, you know, the fact that the AFL has been very keen to handle things on its own for quite a while, but that'd have to wait for another day. It is interesting though, this concept of match fixing and tanking. And I think that reaction you describe really kind of links back to the naivety I was talking about before. I think one of the reasons that this has happened is just because so much of this is outside of the normal everyday thinking of people who run these sports. They just wouldn't consider match fixing and tanking to have been linked to organized crime. Everyone just purely talks about it in the realm of trying to get a top draft pick, not trying to win millions of dollars on international levels of illegal betting.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're completely right. And I think probably from this day forward, people will look a little bit more skeptically at, you know, at the AFL and sport in general. I think it's been a pretty big eye-opener for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I appreciate the honesty with which you've dealt with the issues lying at your own club's doorstep. And I can only hope that we can get answers to all of this soon enough. But it's hard to see any quick results coming. But thanks for coming on, Sam.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to continue this discussion with another young, I guess he's about to become a journalism student at La Trobe, Ben Kazupi. Ben has been following this closely on Twitter for the last couple of days. He's got his own little news site going on at Bound for Glory, and he's been keeping tabs pretty well. So it's going to be interesting to see how you've been following it all. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
I am good, thank you, as well as I can be, considering what we have to deal with. Yet again, it's been a pretty challenging day, wouldn't you say?
It's probably, well, again, everyone keeps using the old cliches that it's, well, earth-shattering, soul-destroying, but as the former chairman of ASADA put it today, this is probably the darkest day in Australian sport. You know, this is completely unprecedented. We've never seen anything like it before.
So yeah, and it's the fact that it was so surprising as well that seems to have had this impact. Do you think that when you look at how surprising this has been and how much it's caught everyone off guard, this is something we were speaking to Sam about before. Do you think there's some of this rests with journalists who perhaps weren't looking for this when they should have been?
And this is definitely one of the things that is currently up for contention, the timeline of this entire incident. Now, I don't know about the timeline regarding the claims of match fixing, the timeline regarding, you know, these other claims in other sports, but the timeline regarding the Essendon Football Club, this is the one that I think is starting to become established. Now, I don't know about the off-season that the AFL has had, but the feeling around AFL insiders was that something wasn't right, and I don't want to say that they knew that it was Essendon or they knew it was someone in particular. There was just a sense of that there were too many rumours and too much smoke for you know, just this to be a regular off-season. And I think considering that there's actually on a select forum, Big Footy, that there's a post which actually indicates the weapon would be implicated in something like this, posted on October 23rd, and Damien Barrett just before said he started making phone calls about December. So I think this is something that they weren't people in the media, they had an idea, but they weren't sure what they were looking at, and it hasn't fallen into place until now.
Yeah, definitely. So let's look at the ACC judgment in general. It's difficult to draw any specifics on this so far, and I think especially with match fixing, although it does seem like there's some more details emerging about that in regards to the A-League, and maybe we can jump to that in a sec, but just looking at doping, is there any real handle on the kinds of doping that have been discussed so far and the potential legality involved there?
Well, it's not traditional steroids. This is the consistent drug that keeps coming up in the news, in the press releases, you know, every 6 hours is growth hormones and peptides. Now, they're basically illegal, but in certain codes they're very close to the edge. And you know, the drug in question is GHRP. Now, you know, to be honest, it's not something that comes up a lot. It recently has become banned. It's not something that's explicitly tested for, in which, you know, doping authorities and even leagues and codes here aren't, you know, looking for straight off the bat. It's not necessarily a traditional, you know, method of bulking up, and it's even being used for recovery as well. So it's caught a lot of people by surprise, to be honest, or, you know, maybe even they're a little asleep at the wheel with, you know, how quick these things move in the sports science world.
It does often seem that, unfortunately, these situations that the pharmacists are a step ahead of the drug testing organisations for, you know, lots of reasons. I imagine the largest would be just due to the economics. You know, you'd imagine that there's more money to be made by creating these drugs than there is to be to catching the people using them.
You're absolutely right there. I mean, the fact that they're actually risking testing these things on athletes like human guinea pigs is, you know, just shows that the level and the high risk and the high stakes that and the high profits that can be made from this.
Yeah, that was the one for me personally that seemed the most surprising. I mean, I've certainly been aware of doping and being involved in sports for a long time, and you know, they've been known to be health risks involved, but some of the particularly extreme measures that we've seen mentioned in these reports and the fact that they've never been tested on humans and are now being used on peak athletes is it's really bizarre, and it kind of shows the fact that this isn't just some, you know, Mickey Mouse operation happening in Australia. This is really the forefront of sports medicine and doping that we've got happening here.
It really shows that there's more where the ACCC comes in, is that there's a real criminal aspect to all this, that there are people out there who know that there's a market for it, that there's a large a large supply. There are people that are looking, and it was, you know, it's been mentioned, I think I was speaking to someone before and saying, you know, you go to gyms, local gyms across the, you know, just amateurs looking to bulk up, you know, and you hear stories and, you know, you think, okay, yeah, someone's using a bit of, you know, steroids here. It's not necessarily a problem for, well, it's a bit of a health risk, but it's not necessarily a problem because they're not professionals or athletes. But, you know, if there's a market there at such a basic amateur level, imagine, you know, on a greater scale where players and athletes do use this to get ahead.
So, I mean, having established, I mean, it's obviously pretty clear that this is happening, although we'll wait and see to the extent as which it's pervaded the leagues. Is there any hint yet to what kind of penalties could be involved here, and essentially, and perhaps more importantly, who's actually going to be held culpable for this whole situation?
Well, WADA and ASADA have definitely stated that players should be responsible for what they ingest, even if they don't know what they've taken. WADA, who do have jurisdiction over the AFL, if caught, the penalty is 2 years. Now, there's been no mention that I've heard or that's been brought to light yet that authorities will go lightly if players caught in a position that allegedly Essendon players have been caught in, where they've, you know, taken something that they weren't sure had an illegal substance in, that they would get some sort of, you know, get off lightly. There's no indication that that will happen if the positive tests come. Even if the penalties are involved, it's the extent. What did the Players Association know? This is just back to AFL. What did the certain athletes' unions know? There's a lot of people. The codes themselves could get, you know, in massive legal entanglements. This is really, really messy.
Absolutely. I mean, it is really difficult, as you suggested, to disentangle this from the AFL, but I've heard speculation and people suggesting that there's a chance that Essendon won't be able to field a team because of the amount of people involved from top to bottom. I find it very difficult to wrap my head around that being a possibility for the AFL.
It's something that I think has been thrown up. I think, and again, it's really hard because we're in completely uncharted waters. We have no idea where we're going with this. It seems every 6 hours it takes a new twist and a new turn. I think, considering there's a lot of TV rights deals out there, the AFL's TV rights deal is $1.5 billion that stipulates that 9 games must be played every weekend. Now, I don't see that being broken, considering that we have no evidence at this point that the players were on something illegal. We don't know if that's true yet. But there is an investigation. Now, what happens 10 rounds into the season? We don't know. Do they get players from VFL level? Are they allowed to pick from, I don't know, talent pools or special drafts? We just don't know what's going to happen. This is probably one of the great, I don't want to say enthralling parts, but probably the most embellishing part of the saga, is that we just don't know what's going to happen next and don't know what the consequences are if worse comes to worse.
Yeah, it is going to be pretty interesting viewing over the next couple of weeks, that's for sure. Let's take a little bit of a break from the AFL, because in this podcast we've been going pretty hard on them for over half an hour now. The A-League was another one that did get specifically mentioned. I mean, obviously other leagues were present at the press conference and made statements, but it seemed like the doping, for whatever reason, is being focused on the AFL right now, and match fixing, was the A-League was raised as a high-risk league for that. Due to games which had a heavy betting on that. Do you believe this is a serious risk for the league?
It's a massive risk. The A-League probably couldn't take the hits that other well-developed codes could. If the A-League was found guilty of a scandal like this, and considering the number, the alleged $40 million bet on one A-League game, and we need to be, you know, pretty... that the regular A-League game, the pot is something like, all up, maybe on average $1.5 million. $40 million a single bet, that raises some really large eyebrows of what's happening. The A-League would probably be in some massive, massive trouble if they had a scandal of this magnitude. And considering the European law enforcement agency, you know, this week released nearly 700 games around the world, including, you know, stuff like World Cup qualifiers, UEFA-sanctioned games, Champions League games, Europa games. You know, they were suspected of being fixed, and this is not only a problem. If it's a problem elsewhere and around the world, I can't see why it can't be a problem here.
Do you think the risk for the A-League is more just that it couldn't take the financial hit, or the fact that it's still trying to gain a, you know, a significant foothold in Australia's sporting marketplace, and the damage it would take to its to the image of the league? What do you think is the more significant potential damage to the A-League?
I think, considering the point in time in which four or five clubs are only consistently making money, I think the fiscal part is definitely the larger component in all this. I think, considering all other codes are being dragged through the mud in, excuse me, different scandals, I think that, you know, if, you know, trying to protect your image through something like this is kind of null and void. There's no point. I think the fiscal impact on the league would be just too irreparable to fathom.
Mm-hmm. So, looking at the report itself, obviously there has been a kind of a cleaned up version that's been given to the media, that's the government report, and then there is the classified version, which has got all the information in it, that's being given to the police. There have been situations in the past where police investigations involving sports people in, you know, less large scale matters have been leaked and players' names have found their way onto the internet. Do you think it's a concern in a situation like this that there's such a strong demand for people to find out the names of players and teams involved that it could get leaked before due process is followed?
I think, considering that unsubstantiated rumours are passing through people in the know as we speak, that, yeah, this is a definite concern. I spoke to a reporter from Fairfax today and they were pretty adamant that it would leak pretty soon. And that, not that they had it in their possession or not that they were able, you know, to get it personally or that they have the story ready, but, you know, they believe in these usual instances, these things do come out. And whether this has repercussions on cases that the federal police are building against certain people, yeah, it might. I mean, it might completely blow people's cover. We don't know who's collecting information where. And that's, yeah, another thing we need to take into account, that this is the crime world we're dealing with. We're dealing with thugs. We're dealing with, you know, downright degenerates. This is a path that, you know, is heavy prison time, life sentences, life bans, you know, completely can change people's lives. And even if they get the information wrong, it could be libelous or slanderous.
Yeah, this is the other thing you raised there, is that even if we find out the names of a couple of sports people who were doping or who, you know, in what seems to be the worst case scenario, we're involved in match fixing, that's ultimately missing the point of what we're trying to achieve here. The point of this investigation is getting to the root of why this is happening. So it'd be a shame for our desire to find out which players on clubs we don't like have been cheating, you know, gets in the way of an incredibly important investigation for the future of sport in Australia.
I think there's a lot of that, to be honest. There's a lot of public reaction, especially concerning they're not telling us anything at the moment, and, you know, obviously leading people to, you know, create their own bizarre theories why, you know, starting to even discredit the entire operation, which I find absurd. You know, people, the information is being omitted for a reason. It's not that I blindly trust authorities. I do trust them, but it's not that I don't question them either. It's just that there are cases being built and we'll know probably when it last happened. And I could say that, you know, it could be leaked, or we could find out when arrest happened. And that's the only two feasible ways that this is going to go public names-wise.
So just finally, I mean, you kind of hinted at there already, and it's something I've heard suggested on SEN and other forums that I think this does tie into the denial of sports fans, is that they want to argue that this is just some grandstanding from a political party that is struggling and is trying to gain some traction. Why do you think that this came out now and was announced at a point where they haven't actually got enough information to begin making any concrete charges?
The timing of this is strange, I won't deny that at all. There's a lot that needs to be cleared up and there's a lot that needs to be put on the official record pretty soon before this spirals too far out of control into speculation. What the authorities need to remember is the longer that they do leave, they've got a responsibility here, the longer that they do leave people in the dark, the longer that they lose control of the narrative. The sporting codes have already lost control of it. The last thing we need is the authorities to. This is something that if they are planning on making a move, they need to do it soon. If not, they need to come forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree. I think that's going to be one of the interesting periods of seeing how these sports handle what I think is going to be an amnesty period in trying to gather more information. But I think that's pretty well enough. I think we've covered all the important points of what the ACC announced, and I appreciate you coming on and kind of giving us some insight into what you've figured out over the last couple of days of trawling through Twitter and keeping track of what's been a pretty unpleasant saga. So thanks for coming on, Ben, and hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Absolutely. No worries, mate.
And that brings a close to this special edition of the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'd like to once again thank both of my guests, Ben Kazupi and Sam McInerney, for their participation. Today's podcast was featured at upstart.net.au and can normally be found at sportspolygamy.com. You can also find this podcast on Facebook and iTunes, where you can subscribe to keep track. Just search for Sports Polygamy. We'll be back next week with regular and hopefully less morose programming. Until then, I'm Eric George. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.